What's up? I am back on the show. I've never been more back than I am right now.
I'm back.
I'm back, baby.
Hey,
it's
back.
Canucks Talk. I'm Jamie Dodd. Back after a few days. What is that? What are you doing? Is that a reference to something that I'm not picking up?
No, it's just like,
just,
you know,
fun.
No, like,
just having fun.
Or when someone like leaves and then returns, it's like,
and
hey,
they say, I'm back.
I'm back. And you're like, great. You know what I'm talking about?
Not really.
That doesn't happen to you in life?
Not really.
Fair enough.
But anyways, I am in fact back. Very exciting. He's Thomas Drance. He also covers the Canucks for The Athletic. Canucks Talk, of course, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Friday edition of the show. And in all seriousness, I am very excited to be back after missing a few days with illness. Shout out to you, Drancer. Shout out to the whole team here for holding things down in my absence. I was telling you guys off air, I was losing my mind. I was bored as hell at home, sitting around, not talking about the Canucks. So I'm very, very excited to get back at it today. Fun Friday show coming up. As I mentioned, you can get your text in 650, 650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Landon Ferraro is going to join us at 1230. We've got lots of time in the back half of the show to take your texts and questions as well. And we got an awful lot to get into today as well. So I think without further ado, let's just go right in to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, November 8th, starting with the headlines. The Canucks finish off a California sweep, their first ever, according to Sportsnet stats.
Wild.
Sweeping through the three California teams with a 4-2 win over the LA Kings. Lots to get into from this one on an individual level. Quinn Hughes we'll talk about. Obviously, the Brock Besser, the hit on Brock Besser from Tanner Jeannot that saw Besser leave the game. We don't really have an update on his status. We'll talk about that. But just from a team perspective, a big picture team perspective, that was the most like last year's team that this year's team has looked to me. High effort, mostly excellent defensive structure, and a business-like professional win to finish off a road trip against a good opponent.
Yeah, that's good framing. I think the way that their defensive game trended once they got to Southern California, the Anaheim game and the LA Kings game, again, we've been talking about it, like waiting for one of those identity games.
Yep.
Where it starts to make sense again. And not that what we'd seen earlier didn't, it was just in fits and starts, and it felt like the Canucks' effort to be a more dynamic offensive mm-hmm. team was not detracting from what they were doing. It's a worthwhile endeavor. It's just that it was not part of a whole yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? In terms of the level that we saw, the like disciplined level that we saw this team hit in terms of the predictability of their game last season. So we'd sort of been talking about them looking for that. I think we kind of saw it, right? We kind of saw it in Anaheim and we saw it again in LA.
Yeah, and the reason the LA one stands out a little bit more to me is obviously adjusting. Like that Ducks game, man, that was a dismal, dismal performance by Anaheim.
I mean, the Ducks are offensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's their first regulation victory of the season against a team in a playoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like currently in a playoff spot, which, you know, is good because there's been a lot of opportunities, right? Calgary is still in a playoff spot,
mm-hmm.
Tampa Bay on and on. So to see them beat down the Ducks the way they did was one thing. But to do it to this Kings team that, you know, played pretty well, like I thought the Kings looked fine,
mm-hmm.
Structurally sound, hardworking, pretty talented. They don't have Quinn Hughes, though.
Nope, they sure don't.
And honestly, even midway through the second period, before the game was truly in Vancouver's control, you could feel it. You know, I thought it when DeBrusk put that chance just wide, and it just felt like it was a matter of time before the Canucks got the 2-1
mm-hmm.
goal. It was just like they have no answer for the Canucks at the top of the lineup right now. There is no analogous player that the Kings can put on the ice that scares you in any way like Quinn Hughes did
nope.
for Vancouver. So you know, that's the story of this Kings kind of build, right? Is they built a pretty good team. They built a pretty deep team. They play hard. They don't have that star player. That it's cost them 3 years in a row against the Oilers. Quinn Hughes right now is at that level where when you're against a good team like the Kings that doesn't have the great player,
mm-hmm.
it's a bit of a mismatch.
Yeah, and I mean, good team structure and defensive effort plus superstar player, like that's a really good formula. That's yeah. That will win you a lot of regular season games, especially in the NHL. And if the Canucks can do that consistently and Quinn Hughes keeps playing at anything close to this level, they're going to continue to rack up points, certainly, in the regular season. And you know, just a point on the defensive effort. I mean, there were a couple of things in the third period, especially where, you know, just little plays. But, you know, you talk a lot about the neutral zone wedge that they have, right? The 1-2-2 and the way they force the opponent into the boards and then kind of pressure them. And, you know, there was a play like halfway through the third period last night where they do that perfectly, and you know the Kings are trying to advance through the neutral zone, and instead the puck just kind of dribbles over the blue line right to Tyler Myers, and he's under no pressure whatsoever, and they're able to go the other way. And there's another play a little bit later where the Kings have it in the offensive zone and trying to make a bit of a hopeful, maybe desperation cross ice pass.
There's a lot of that.
Suter is in perfect position. It's like, no, it's on my tape instead. Yeah. And then they're going the other way.
The Kings were not very good in the final third.
No,
like as much as Vancouver played well defensively, I feel like the best compliment you can pay to their defensive game was that it looked like LA's creative players were a little bit out of sorts all night long.
Yeah.
They were trying stuff that had no hope of working. So yeah, I mean, a really nice performance from Vancouver, and their defensive game prior to this California road trip had been sagging a little mm-hmm. bit relative to the exceptionally high standard that this club set last season, right? They were only about average in terms of inner slot shots. You could see the seams in terms of what they were permitting against the rush. Certainly the efforts of the Devils and the Carolina Hurricanes spoke to that. And man, it feels like they really found a way on this California trip, granted against inferior competition, to tighten the belt, as it were, to really suffocate their opponents 5-on-5 and limit rush chances against. So a really nice confidence building three-game sweep of a California road trip from a Vancouver perspective.
Now, you mentioned Quinn Hughes, just his dominance at the top of the lineup, unequaled, not even close to equaled by anything LA can throw out there. And, you know, I do think we should spend some time dwelling on Quinn Hughes here, right? And we've done this already a lot throughout this young season, obviously did it a lot last year as he won the Norris Trophy. But, I mean, really,
I think he needs it more this year. I'm yes. telling you, not only is he playing better, but he's playing better in the exact type of way that the national media fails to understand. You know what I mean? So yes. I feel like it's even more important to just be like, well, no, this is incredible.
There's a couple of points I want to make about Quinn Hughes. I mean, first of all, like, I thought that might have been his most impressive performance of the season last night. It's hard to pick. It's hard to pick just one because he's been phenomenal almost every
night. Anaheim might have been, man. I know it's ridiculous. I know it's Anaheim, but the way that he was dancing in that game at the offensive blue line, the amount of space that they were leaving him to operate in and what he was doing with it felt like, you know, Event Horizon, where have you seen the movie Event Horizon?
I don't think so.
It's Sam Neill's first movie after Jurassic Park, and he goes crazy on a spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they find a spaceship that... So here's the thing. You fold a piece of paper, you poke a hole through it. It's like, what's the fastest way through time and space?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, through it. You know what I mean? Like a black hole. Anyway, they go through a black hole and unleash hell, basically, in space. Really good. You should watch it.
All right.
Anyway, that's what Quinn Hughes was doing. He was poking the hole through the paper and defying physics.
So, to the point of...
I can't believe you've never seen Event Horizon.
I don't know. Why? You really can't believe that?
Defies belief. A classic.
I have not seen Event Horizon.
Sam Neill tears out his eyes and goes on a murder spree on a spaceship. Oh, you gotta watch it.
Spoiler alert. No point in watching it now. Just be waiting for the eye tearing out scene the whole time. So as you said, like he's doing it in such a way that is not immediately picked up if you're not paying really close attention
yes.
to the games. And one of the things that really stands out to me about what he's doing is just the sheer level of responsibility he's shouldering for the Canucks right now. And, you know, like a solid rule of thumb across sports, really, and especially in hockey, is that as your workload and your responsibility increases, your efficiency probably decreases a little bit, right? Like, and you think about, you know, a really good third pairing defenseman that gets promoted to top 4 minutes, and all of a sudden it's like, ah, that's not so great. Let's dial that back down to third pairing minutes. And I think the truly great players are the ones who can break that curve, right? Who can do, like, be asked to carry a very, very heavy load and still have elite efficiency and elite results while doing that. And I mean, he was already doing that last year. He won the Norris Trophy. He's somehow taking on even more responsibility, and I don't mean in terms of minutes. I mean what he's being asked to do while he's on the ice. He's somehow taking on even more of that and getting even better results. Like, that's not how it's supposed to work. You're supposed to be, okay, hey, we're going to ask you to do a little bit more, and maybe the results won't look quite as rosy, but you're the best bet, so we have to do it. He's the guy carrying the puck all the time, the guy making things happen in the offensive zone. Oftentimes, he's the guy shooting. He's certainly the guy setting up his teammates for grade-A scoring chances, as he did for Jake DeBrusk last night. He's making key defensive plays. He's doing everything for this team when he's on the ice, and there's been no slippage whatsoever in his efficiency. In fact, he's been like driving even better results when he's on the ice than he was last year. It's just incredible. And our pal Jay Fresh had some charts singing the praises of Quinn Hughes on Twitter today, and one of them showed that Quinn Hughes, now granted small sample size early in the season, all that, but if you look at his rate of zone entries, so the amount of times he's carrying the puck into the offensive zone with control, it's almost doubled from last year. And I was like, he was already elite. He won the Norris Trophy, and that was one of his strengths last year, and he's almost doubled it. Like, he is, I don't know if there's a single player who's being asked to do more for their team than Quinn Hughes is right now in the NHL. And he's not just passing what, like, the test they're putting in front of him. He is acing it. He's absolutely on another planet right now.
Well, and I think you could add this, like, he's doing it too with, you know, less help, arguably, right? Like, Elias Pettersson has struggled relative to the form that he had, especially early on last season, right? We think JT Miller has played hurt. In fact, we know he has because he didn't take draws for a week earlier on this season. He hasn't had Thatcher Demko backing him up. You know, no muss, no fuss.
Yep.
I mean, you want to understand why this Canucks team is on pace to be every bit as good as they were last season. Quinn Hughes has provided them with this margin for error that, you know, I just don't think this club had as a group last season.
Yeah. No, he's everything for this team right now, and it's really just incredible to watch. It's a pleasure to watch. I mean, some of the plays he's made in these last couple of games in particular are just out of this world. And, you know, one of the other things I've noticed people in the market are doing, it happened on the post-game show last night, the morning show today as well. One of my favorite things, which is the cross-sports analogy to try to sum up and put in context what we're seeing. On the post-game show, it was Patrick Mahomes, right, based on his ability to escape pressure, distribute. On the morning show, Bruff was comparing him to, like, an elite NBA point guard. And I want to go with that one for a second. I'll go with a specific point guard. And this is great sports radio pandering because it's a local guy. Back-to-back MVP Steve Nash. That's the vibes I'm getting watching Quinn Hughes, because one of Nash's genius-level traits was he almost never picked up his dribble, right? Like, he'd get into the lane, he'd be on the baseline, two guys would be pressuring him, and you'd think you'd have him contained, and somehow he escapes, he gets back out to the perimeter, and all of a sudden the defense is completely on their heels, discombobulated, and boom, Nash finds Amari Stoudemire alone in the key, right? And it's an easy bucket. And that's what it feels like watching Quinn Hughes right now, right? Like, you saw it on the DeBrusk goal last night. He gets in these spots where basically every other D-man in the world is under pressure at the blue line, and they're making the safe play, they're dumping it down the wall deep into the zone, and okay, hopefully the team can get back on the cycle. And instead, with Quinn Hughes, he's spinning away, he's getting out of it, he's creating space, the defense is on their heels, and then boom, he makes the right pass, he finds a score in a good opportunity. It's this the combination of the technique, the vision, the confidence, all of that, that's my cross sports comparison for Quinn Hughes right now, is MVP level Steve Nash. That's what those are the vibes he's given me at the moment.
I just haven't seen a defenseman have this type of individual impact ever. Now, granted, I'm too young to have watched Bobby Orr, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember Brian Leetch breaking my heart as a child, but I wasn't like thinking.
You weren't like, wow, what a zone entry by Brian Leetch.
I wasn't like thoughtful about what I was seeing or didn't understand it all.
or like level peak that I do Paul now. Coffey, or you know, yeah,
totally. Well, peak Paul Coffey is closer to where I had at least a slightly more more mature understanding of it, just a little bit, right?
Really, wouldn't peak Paul Coffey would be more in the 80s?
Well, I'm just saying, I remember like Paul Coffey moving the puck in 96 at like the Canada Cup or whatever, and feeling like I understood the advantage of a puck mover at that point. I was like, he's like Jurke Lume is for the Canucks. Okay, maybe not. Point being. But yeah, I mean, I think he's hit such a preposterous level at this point, Jamie. And, you know, there's no question that he's the best defenseman on the planet. I think the only question is, does that get recognized if he only ends up with 10 goals and 85 points instead of you know, close to 20 goals and
100 points,
right? Yep. Does he need, and you know, the fact that he might is such a fundamental misunderstanding, right, of what Quinn Hughes does and why he is so valuable. Like, it goes so far beyond points.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess where I'd quibble with, like, comparing him to a quarterback, for example, right, is, like, one of the things that struck me about last night's games was the, or last night's game, last night's performance, was all the moments where it was just like quick harpoon or knife of a puck away from a forward.
Yeah.
And then, you know,
yeah,
there was
he made awesome defensive plays last night too. That's
all
the funny
over the
thing.
Ice. Yeah. And there was one sequence in the first period, for example, where he did so and then immediately flipped the puck up ice and like rushed through the neutral zone. You know what I mean? And sort of created a Canucks attack with the Kings off kilter. And it's just like, that's a one of one play. The speed with which both the turnover was forced and with which he entered the Kings zone with control of the puck. And then also has like the attacking skill, the final third skill to actually do something with it for real. I mean, that is, again, one of one stuff. That is, there is Quinn Hughes and there's everybody else. And so, you know, I almost feel like the comparison has to be like a soccer player, like a midfielder or something,
like a two-way force. Yeah,
exactly. Like a De Bruyne or, you know, but he's like slicker than that. He's smaller than that. Like almost like if Prime Ronaldinho played a little further back, played a little deeper, that would almost be my thing, because, you know, I think whether it's Steve Nash or a quarterback, like quarterback's obviously a one-way player.
Yeah.
And
Steve Nash was not a great defensive player.
Steve Nash was also a one-way player.
Yes,
you know, it's like marry Steve Nash with the glove,
Gary Payton,
and you've got something. You know, like, so. Yeah, I mean, we can list greats from other sports, and it's like, yeah, but they don't really make the same impact. Like, they don't, you know, the comparisons you're using don't even go far enough.
Yeah, it's wild. And we're talking like Patrick Mahomes and back-to-back MVP Steve Nash, and it's like, well, but you got to add this too.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, but he's better defensively.
Okay, other headline, of course, from last night. Brock Besser leaves the game in the first period after a truly, truly ugly blindside headshot from Tanner Jeannot, who was assessed match penalty. He'll have a hearing with the NHL today. I believe it's a phone hearing, so of course that precludes the possibility of suspension longer than five games, but it does seem very, very likely that he will be suspended.
In the hall of Thomas Drance randomly has a semantic quibble.
Uh-huh.
Have I ever told you about my telephone one?
No.
It's not a telephone hearing. It's a telephonic hearing.
Oh my gosh.
I don't
know. That's an all-timer.
Yeah. The league specifies that it's a telephonic hearing, but no one ever calls it that.
Jamie, you can go homesick.
That is an absolute all-timer.
Yeah, it's a whopper.
Oh, man. Anyways, Tanner Jeannot will have a telephonic hearing with the NHL.
There we go.
And I thought I wanted to come back to work. But, I mean, like, what are you going to say? Like, I haven't seen anyone.
Well, you're going to call it by its right
thing.
Yes,
exactly. I haven't seen anybody try to offer a defense of Jeannot. There isn't one, a plausible one that I can see. It's just, that's the exact hit that the NHL has tried and for the most part succeeded at eliminating from the game. It felt like a hit from 15 years ago. It's just, there's no reason for it. There's no reason for it. Has no place in the game. And the referees, full credit to them for making the right call with the match penalty in the moment. And hopefully that the NHL does the right thing and gives an appropriate suspension.
Yeah, they will. I mean, so a telephone hearing limits what the Department of Player Safety, you know, at the discretion of the commissioner, can suspend a player for, you know, I would expect three as sort of a fat part of a bell curve outcome here. Maybe he gets a little bit longer. The truth is that Janot has never been suspended previously, so he's not a repeat offender. That might not get him off light. Three games is still a pretty hefty suspension for a first-time offender, but you know that might be something of mitigating circumstances. There are clearly no mitigating circumstances, however, surrounding the hit itself. It was just a brutal one. Like, so there's three things to look for when you're talking about Rule 48 violations. Rule 48, of course, applying to illegal checks to the head. And the main one is, like, is the head the principal point of contact, is how the media often talks about it. The main point of contact, right? And in this case, it was. Like, very, very clearly, indisputably, not controversial to note this, the head was the main point of contact. Here's another important one that the league considers strongly. Is the contact to the hit avoidable? In this case, very clearly it was. In fact, Janot had an unusual amount of time to consider the angle and hit Besser through the mass of his body, through his core, and failed to do so. Abjectly failed to do so. Finally, something the league often looks at closely is, were there mitigating circumstances? In that, did the player who got hit, the hittee, in any way change their body angle prior to the hit making contact? And, like, it's uncanny how little Besser did so prior to this hit. So, look, that's three for three, three strikes. Like, there was no question the moment the hit was thrown that there was going to be supplementary discipline. I would expect three or four games. And if you want to see a comparable hit and how the league punished it, the one hit that came to mind for me right away was Doughty on William Carrier in the 2018 playoffs. That's a hit that's like sort of similar here, but if you go watch it, you know, because I showed it to you prior to us going on air, and you agreed with me. You were like, yeah, that is similar, but I actually think this one's worse.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. Like, you are right. It's like
the Doughty one, it's more like glancing contact almost, whereas this is just like full force, really. Yeah. And then, as you said, Carrier kind of changes his angle a little bit as well.
Carrier skates into the middle of the ice, so at least there's some understanding for why Doughty would have missed that badly. In this case, there isn't. This was just a brutal hit. You just hope Besser is okay. Club obviously didn't confirm anything about his status post-game, right? He wasn't even given an upper or lower when the club ruled him out for the evening. But, you know, you would assume that this is a head injury, and if that's a correct assumption, you know, it's worth noting it does take days usually, like multiple days to clear the protocol.
Yeah, Canucks won't practice today, of course, coming back from the three-game road trip. They play Edmonton tomorrow, so as we kind of shift to the lineup notes here for the whiteboard quickly, you know, next chance to get an update on Besser's status would probably be morning skate tomorrow ahead of the Oilers game. Who knows what Besser's status will be for that one. If it is a head injury, seems unlikely, and this is just pure speculation, right, given the amount of information we have, that he'd be able to go against Edmonton. Certainly, I mean, he's having such a great season. Obviously, he's dealt with so many different things, including the blood clot that kept him out of Game 7 last year. Like, you got to think this game against the Oilers, for him especially, would be a really key one, since he wasn't in Game 7 in the playoffs. So hopefully this is very, very short term for Brock Besser. And of course, the question comes up as well, if he is on the shelf for any length of time, does that create an opening for Jonathan Lekker-Mäki, who scored again this week, up to, what, 39 shots in 7 games?
Ridiculous.
For the Abbotsford Canucks, so could create an opening for him to get back in the lineup as well. Quickly to the playoff standings update, courtesy of Dom's model, and as a result of these three straight wins, things are already very rosy for the Canucks in the model. They're now at a 98% chance to make the playoffs, and a 10% chance to win the Stanley Cup per Dom's model, which is fourth best in the NHL. So one of the four favorites to win the Stanley Cup per Dom's model are the Canucks right now. And again, has it been the most overwhelmingly impressive start to the season? Certainly not, but you sit here and they have 17 points in 12 games for a 708 points percentage. So they've still found a way to pick up points at a very impressive clip. All right.
Gambling odds.
Okay. Because we wanna do the game tomorrow?
Hmm?
You're going to do the game?
Oh, sure, I can. I was.
Well, or you do whatever you want. No, don't let me tell you what to do. I don't care.
I wanted to note that Quinn Hughes remains 7.5-1 to win the Norris Trophy. Cale Makar in the minus, right? Like, you have to pay a vig to bet on Cale Makar to win the Norris. He's been outscored 5-on-5. Just pointing out there. Avs have been outscored at 5-on-5 with your have to pay the vig to even bet them to win the Norris favorite on the ice. Feels like that should matter. I don't know.
Yep. Feels like it should.
Feels like it should matter. That's all I'm saying.
All right. We'll leave it there. That's the whiteboard for today. Up next, Landon Ferraro joins us here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.